I spoke to John that I'm trying to put it in life. And after that, I went downstairs and then I finally was able to make it work. So the purpose was testing how far with magnification can I go. And that what was unknown to me was that I could have a magnification another 50 times bigger than this one. So it's absolutely amazing what you can do with the X-rays. It's a photography, but it's quite different photography. If you are able to find it, email May 25th, says My Lab X-ray HP Modified First Test, and to you.
And I have that satellite thing for you, Dick.
Very fine, now, Paul, get back to you in a second. Okay, so you found out you were able to do X-ray microscopy. What was the resolution in thousandths of an inch west, if you happen to know? Go ahead.
It's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. But if the pin by itself is approximately a quarter of an inch long, now I've got on the picture, and let's say 1/8 thick. So on the picture I have 3 inches thick and approximately 10 inches long. Enjoy here.
Paul, what is the name of that satellite? And you're talking about the one now with the 60-foot diameter dish, WS2N, K2LAW?
Sky 2, back in 2009. And then that's since TERRE1. That was, I'm sorry, 18 meters. That's the one that's 60 feet. But that another one after it, it's both by the same company, SSL, made another one called Sky Terror at 22 meters. But these things are heavy in there. Like the other one, the first one that was 60 meters diameter, weighed something like over 15,000 pounds. And then now these new ones that went up, they have four dish antennas on it. That's how they're doing it. They're adding up the, the distance between one end and the other end. That's where they're coming up with 60 feet on the new ones. But these are actual dish antennas, TERRE1, TERRE-1, and Sky Terror. TERRA. They're actually up there in geosynchronous orbit at 4 degrees inclination. Back to you, Dick. Well, 111 degrees west also, so it's permanently in one location.
Very fine, Paul. Thank you. So Terra, TERRA, you pronounce the TERRE. I think it's TERRA-1 and Sky Terra, TERRA. All by the SSL company. And a 60-foot diameter dish, and it's a direct broadcast satellite with lots of simultaneous beams. Boy, and I think it's at 1,800 watts of solar power. Boy, that must be a multiple-ton object, which used a pretty big booster. Is that true, Paul? Go ahead.
They went up on Ariane 5, which is, it's a liquid oxygen booster, plus the solids, they have two attached to them. You see the Ariane 5, that's European Space Agency's biggest rocket. One time they had planned on putting a man craft on top of that. But it's TERRE-1, TERRE-1. That's the first one. So it is spelled with an E. The second one is Sky Terror. Sky Terra, TERRA, like what you were saying. So, for some reason, there's a difference. And SSL is the Space Systems Loral, LORAL. That's the name of the company that makes these things. American. So, good. And they're right now, it's over the United States,
in Canada. Canada uses it as well. Back to you, Dick.
The Ariane 5, roughly what is the thrust of that on takeoff, Paul? How many megapounds of thrust does that thing got?
I think it's 4 million, close to 4 million, 3.8 or something. But it's up there. It's their biggest one. And then now they have three different ones. That's their biggest one. And then they have actually they buy Soyuz rockets now from Russia and rebuild them entirely and launch them from South America as well, from French Guiana. So that's their medium rocket. And then they have the smaller one now, the new one that launched, I think, three or four different times, the Vega. That's what they are using. Everybody likes to try to cover the whole field of, you know, the smaller satellites all the way up to the big ones to make them competitive. Back to you.
Loral is an American company, and the SSL, Loral was Loral the subcontractor, and this Terra 1 and Sky Terra, are these products, was the Pine contractor United States, or was this a consortium? Who was the final customer for this product? Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. Who paid to have this up there? good question. I know a lot of cell phones were going to be using it. But SSL, I mean, the picture I had brought up for this group, you know, there's a big American flag behind them. I don't know much about SSL, Space Systems, Loral. Don't know much about that group. I know more about the Ariane spacecraft, the Ariane space group that builds the Ariane rockets. But, they have a certain, they call them a bus that they build it off of the LS-1300S. I'll have to look that up. That LS probably has something to do with Loral and their space system group. I'm reading about these cell phones, but I don't know actually who paid the Dish Network was involved. Dish Network.
Dish Network sounds domestic. Maybe it's a consortium, but it sounds domestic. And at first you thought the 60-foot machine was called Sky Mexico 1. Is that a different satellite, Paul? G2LAW?
Very heavy ones that went up. That Sky Mexico 1 and Dish Network, Dish 1, whatever it was the two satellites in one that was launched by Ariane 5 the other last week. And they put it into a geosynchronous orbit as well. And that's going to serve Central America and the United States. And that's being done by Dish Network, TV and all. So, you know, I was reading about the size of this. They're very huge machines. Solar panels, to give you an idea, is 90 feet long. They're going to generate 18,000 watts. And for instance, they call them spot, like this one here, this Terra. 114 spot transmissions. So I'm not sure what that all means, Dick, you know. That's what I mean. It's all at one time, going down to different locations. So, yeah, I know you know more about that than me, but some kind of 114 spot locations on the Terra satellites.
Boy, that's a lot. And you did say now 18,000 watts, 18 kilowatts solar panels, 90 feet long. Earlier you said 1.8 kilowatts, 1,800 watts you said, but I think you meant 18 kilowatts. Wow, that's a lot of steam. And let's hope that there's enough reaction control gas. I presume these are geosynchronous satellites. hope there's enough reaction control gas that they can use these for a full 10 years before they have to put it into the graveyard. Boy, that must be... any idea of the total amount of mass of these objects, Paul? They sound like some of the biggest things we've ever put up in geosynchronous orbit. And boy, if one of these things starts drifting in the wrong place and hits somebody else, you're going to get some very unhappy folks out there. Who do you pull? K2LAW.
Hey, Dick, you need a lot of power. Get 36 transponders at 150 watts apiece at 12 gates.
Hey, they said 15 years. Yeah, you're right. 70-some-odd transponders, and another 23, some other kind of transmitting device. Big time.
In the early days of C-band geosynchronous satellites, they were putting out numbers like 5, 10, 15 watts per transponder. I think you're saying, Eric, 150 watts per transponder and 36 of them? Whoa. This thing is almost a solar-powered satellite. K2EJ, K2LIW, go ahead, Eric.
K2RIW, K2J. Just look at the size of the dishes on the house. Okay. Figure all the noise that you need. At that, and it's actually 2PSK what they sent down. You need something like, I think minimum is like 17 or 18. But anyway, as you well know, one of the reasons why the dishes are so small is they're not, you know, they're sort of an offset sphere. But you still need some signal to, you know, overcome this path loss of space and make it into the little dish, which doesn't have a heck of a lot of gain.
Yeah, that dish at 18 inches in diameter, offset fed with a probably 20, 30 degree Kelvin low noise front end, looking at cold sky, as long as you're not during those two times in the year when the satellite is in the direction of the sun, that gives you a very good cryogenic system, a very good radio telescope, so to speak. So I think that dish has something in the vicinity of 25, 28 dB of gain. We can work out the mathematics of that. 12 gigs, 18 inch diameter, and probably running at the 65% aperture efficiency of the parabolic dish, maybe even 70% because of the way the offset works. That's a very well-designed system. Do you know that dish, and there's probably 10 million of them in use right now, do you know that was designed by a ham radio operator, one of the microwave groups that we know about, Eric, K2EJ, K2RIW, he did that at RCA Astro Labs.
By the way, Dick, it's got 3 metric tons, 26 transponders on one end of it, the other one's got 72 transponders, KA band, KU band. That's about all I know about it.
Dick, I don't have the answer to the question that you're asking. I honestly don't know. I would assume, I mean, are you looking at some of the old QRSTs, you see some of the stuff that people were doing there. Some satellites are 24 transponders if they're C band. But generally, the KUs are 36. The KAs sometimes are. More or less, I don't know Dish Network or Echo Star that's one too well, but I know what DirecTV has, so I assume it's something similar.
And I think you were saying, Eric, that the downlink on KU band into that dish requires 17 decibels of carrier-to-noise ratio in order for that, I believe it's an FM-modulated signal. I think you're saying 17 dB carrier-to-noise ratio is required for that 2PSK signal to be properly demodulated with the right bit error rate. Are those roughly the numbers, Eric, K2LIW?
I think that's where the threshold of being able to put together an MPEG-4 picture. And actually, obviously, you want more, and you want the BER to be zero, if you could get it that way, but that doesn't turn out. Some of it's QPSK, some of it's 8PSK. It depends. What the provider wants, whether it's encrypted, that kind of stuff. So, I think that's the very least it can do. You know, if it was an FM, if it was normal FM, then that's a whole other story.
Now that system with that very low noise front end, gas fed front end, with two separate low noise preamplifiers, one for clockwise and one for counterclockwise, and they don't even try to switch the front end, they just switch which amplifier they turn on. If that dish aims into a tree, if the edge of that beam looks at a tree, the tree is obviously a lossy item in KU band. It's at 300 degrees Kelvin. The signal to noise ratio of the system, the noise figure of the system degrades real fast and you lose the picture. Correspondingly, on a heavy rainy day, you lose that KU band downlink, not necessarily because of the insertion loss of the rain, it's because the raindrops are not symmetrical and it starts mixing the clockwise and counterclockwise signals of the two adjacent transponders, the two adjacent channels, and therefore the bit error rate starts climbing real fast on a heavy rainy day. It's not insertion loss that does it. You can be getting enough carrier strength, but because of the frequency overlap of that scheme, the two, if you're listening to transponder number 3, transponder number 2, and transponder number 4 of opposite circular polarization, they can jam you if you're not maintaining enough isolation between clockwise and counterclockwise because of non-symmetrical large raindrops. KE2EJ, KQRAW.
Absolutely, Dave. Most people don't realize that. It's the depolarization that's the problem. As you do know, that the conventional satellites are horizontal and vertically polarized as opposed to the direct-to-home satellites, which are circularly polarized. Yeah, you get the same effect. But yeah, you know, even when we were watching analog FM, yeah, it went away, but you got to see it go away with the digital. It just goes away really fast.
And now, of all the TVRO working and listening that I did in the past, and I've got to put that dish back up again, I hope there's still some of those channels out there that are not scrambled that I can watch, particularly downlink feeds. I do remember during solar outages or during heavy rain and whatever, the picture, you could watch the sparklies in the picture degrade as your FM demodulator started seeing poor carrier to noise ratio. I think you're telling me now that the TVROs are also using digital downlink, and as such, the picture suddenly freezes and disappears, very similar to terrestrial digital television. Is that true, Paul? Eric, K2EJ, K2RIW?
Yeah, it is, Dick. By the way, if you're going to pick up a big ugly dish, you better have some things in mind, because there's virtually very little analog left. It's all digital of one form or another. There are receivers out there that will, you know, that you can get that will turn it back into video for you. Mostly the stuff these days is high def, not low def, or standard definition, but there's still a lot of standard definition stuff. Yeah, the right receivers, there's a gold mine of things to watch, but a lot of the certain satellites, like the cable satellites, most of the stuff on there is scrambled, unless, of course, it happens to be some religious garbage or something that you're not necessarily interested in. Yeah, it used to be that they worried about big ugly dishes, but those things seem to be a seeing thing of the past. They didn't bother to distribute a lot of encryption on a lot of stuff, but it's K2RW, K2J.
In the case of the analog downlink TVROs, the local oscillator in most cases was being generated by way of a dielectric resonator oscillator, which had enough stability. And as some of these digital techniques were coming along, they were starting to go into phase lock looped LO systems. Are all these digital downlinks now requiring phase lock loop buffer? In other words, higher stability than you can get out of a TVR, out of a dielectric resonator oscillator, KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Yeah, K2RIW, KE2EJ. Now, the LMBs that you want to use for the downlink, actually, there's a new series. Yeah, the phase lock loop. They're actually some of them, you can get them that they're stable within 50 hertz to 60 hertz. But they're high stability oscillators, and actually the noise figures have gotten much better because of the better components. I think that one of them is using silicon carbide or some exotic front end. I'm not sure what the material is.
So I think you're telling me now that all of the currently available low noise block down converters that are at the focal point of the dish are now using higher stability oscillators. There's essentially none of them anymore with just a dielectric resonator. They're really now a phase lock loop crystal controlled oscillator in order to get enough spectral purity. Over to you, Eric, K2RIW.
Yeah, K2RIW from K2J. Well, from what I understand, there's a couple of, I think Dawn and another one. They're still using ceramic resonators, but they get the stability.
Okay, you said ceramic resonator. Dielectric resonator oscillator. It's a kind of a ceramic. It's a barium tetratitanate, and the actual material is going to resonate. It's a little hockey puck in there, very precisely made. And you get darn good stability, but not quite crystal control phase lock loop stability. So I think you're saying that some of them get enough stability out of the dielectric resonator, out of the ceramic resonator. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not as good as the crystal-controlled ones, but it ain't that bad either.
And is there a digital downlink, high-def, low-def, that does require crystal-controlled spectral purity?
No, interesting you should ask. With UHD, they want to go. They want to do better. But it's not really that necessary, because you've got to remember the stuff is coming down asynchronous. So if it has little time-based errors, we used to call them the video bits, it's not that big a deal. It's just the nature of the way the stream is put together and how it separates your data. And there is a point where what you wind up with is jitter. You know, you're allowed to have, you know, say, up to 50 or 100 nanoseconds worth of jitter, and the thing's still going to work okay. Where is that going with this? Yeah, the nature of what comes down is usually pretty damn stable. So, you know, the heterodyne oscillator that you're using in the front end, you know, adds to the jitter problem, but you still have a little headroom. That's what I'm looking for. So, you know, you can, now I know where he's going. Let me let it drop. You can play certain kinds of tricks with your satellites. Like when we're doing, say for example, New Year's Eve, and we do this thing from Vienna. The typical trick that they do is they use one transponder, and they actually, even though a transponder may have a lot of stuff on it, they will rent one transponder, and the two opposing transponders on the other polarization will be turned off for the duration of that particular event. So that way, the downlink, which is a diversity site, is two or three sites. Should both diversity sites receive rain, chances are they may still be able to get a good image out of it. Yeah, there is also some attenuation, but it's minor. Things like that. K2RW, K2 again.
I do remember with my TVRO during C-band reception on a couple of occasions when a real heavy rainstorm came along, where I was starting to get a lot of sparklies in the picture. If I reoriented the dish, I could make most of the sparklies disappear. In other words, the real heavy rainstorm seemed to be acting like a dielectric cloud that was steering the beam to some slightly different apparent angle of arrival. I was seeing that at C-band. I don't remember seeing that at KU-band. Also, in the early C-band days, the transponders, I think, were primarily traveling wave tubes. In other words, they used 99% angular modulation so that they could run high efficiency. And I don't think there was any amplitude modulation. It wasn't QAM. It was pure angular modulation, primarily phase or FM. Are the modern satellites still using primarily angular modulation in order to get maximum efficiency, or is this some amplitude like QAM getting in there? KE2EJ, K2RW, in the downlink.
No, actually, it's just a heterodyne device in the satellite transponder. You know, you go in one frequency and heterodyne it to another. And it'll be upside down, of course. Actually, today everything's an SSPA, but still. The form that's used is called the DVBS, S for satellite. And it either comes BPSK, QPSK, or APSK, which are not amplitude modulated like QAM is. They're just angular modulation.
Okay, sounds like that philosophy has been preserved. You get maximum efficiency when your final stage can run Class C angular modulation, as long as you're not requiring linear amplitude. See, in order to get linear amplitude modulation, you have to back off something fierce from your peak envelope power capability of your SSPA, particularly of a TWT. I think, I know that Alan Sock, K2UIH, with his linear technology company, is putting in circuits that can allow you to get increased linearity with the known saturation characteristics of the tube that's doing the uplink. So he can give you a lot more linearity, and you don't have to back off quite as far. I don't know if that's being used in the downlink. It sounds to me like downlink is purely angular modulation to get maximum efficiency on the bird. And so I am guessing the reason why Alan is working on linearizers for uplink so that they have the ability to transponder, send more than one carrier through that transmitting tube. Is that possibly what's going on? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
No, it's trying to bring you up to date again. A transponder, typically on a C-band satellite was 24-27 megahertz wide. Typically on a K-band satellite, they'd either be 24 or 32, and some are 50. Well, if I'm going to rent a transponder, I would like to rent as little transponder as possible because they're expensive. PBS used to have carry all the services in the analog days. We used I think it was almost 12 different transponders to get various different services. Today we only use one. Okay, the reason why is because of compression techniques. So, I may only need to transmit a 3 megabit stream. That only takes up a little piece of a transponder. And I may put another stream right on top of that. I may put another stream right on top of that. All within the space of one transponder. So each one of these uplinks, there might be different uplinks, are tuned precisely to that slot and frequency that is theirs on the transponder for sending their data, and other people do the same thing. So you can, if you're not careful and you don't design things well, wind up with IM products that you couldn't imagine you ever existed and you never want to see. So yeah, there's a lot of thoughts. More and more today's satellites are SSPAs. Even the uplinks now are SSPAs as opposed to using TWTs. It's cheaper and easier and it takes less nasty voltage and stuff like that. K2RIW, K2J.
Alan recognized. One quick question though, Eric. That is there more than one carrier frequency going through one SSPA in that uplink? In which case now you need linearity. Otherwise, you'd be cross-modulating between them. If all of your individual transponders are on one carrier, you can get away with murder, I think, with compression techniques. But if there's more than one carrier frequency, then I think you need all kinds of amplitude linearity. Am I wrong on that? KE2EJ, over to you, Eric, and then turn it over to Alan. K2LAW.
Okay, K2RIW, K2J. Well, we got one thing going for us these days that is very helpful, is that no longer are we really transmitting analog stuff. So, yes, when we take a transponder that's 24 or 27 megahertz wide, and we put 16 or 20 different carriers, or 10 different carriers, at various different points along the bandwidth of that really a transponder, which you're using to take it in from 14 gigs and down convert it to 12 gigs and ship it out another antenna. Yeah, group delay, things of that nature, non-linearity effects, a whole bunch of things come into play that you don't normally think about when you, say, putting one FM carrier that's deviating, you know, 27 megahertz wide.
KC2RFN, we haven't heard from you in a long time, Alan. And hope that flight test went well. K2RW, you got it, Alan.
I took the IA stat test. That was no problem. But I have TVRO system as well. When you're referring to angular modulation, are you talking about phase modulation, or are you talking about the polarizer that they would put in front of those LNA, LNBs?
When it comes to ways you can modulate an RF carrier, there's zillions of ways you can do it in amplitude. Single sideband is one of them, for instance, and all kinds of digital amplitude modulations. If you're using frequency and or phase modulation, both of those are called angular modulation. You could run the final stage, Class C, high efficiency. Don't worry about saturation. Don't worry about amplitude linearity if you're using pure angular modulation. So back in the TVRO analog days of my experience, 10 or more years ago, angular modulation meant FM or phase. And so you got a lot more efficiency out of the bird when you ran it that way. KC2RFN, KQLAW.
Okay, well, what I distinctly remember was also having that polarizer on the front end there. And, you know, I would think that also increased the efficiency, since you can run multiple signals and have them not interfere with each other. And I believe they were at 90 degrees to each other, isn't that right?
Yes, a particular satellite, in the case of C-band, all of your odd channels might be horizontally polarized, and all of your even channels might be vertically polarized. And the reason why they did that cross-polarization is because they were using frequency overlap. In other words, the upper half of transponder number one was on the exact same frequency as the lower half of transponder number two. And the upper half of transponder number two is the same polarization as the lower half of transponder number three. So, in other words, if you're looking at transponder number two, half of it overlapped with number one, half of it overlapped with number three. And so, as long as you've got a horizontal probe that you can rotate with a little servo motor in there to a vertical probe, and as long as you've got that probe going to the right accuracy, you had about 30 dB of isolation between those two polarizations, and it worked like a charm. Let me drop. And when the probe was in an intermediate position, halfway between horizontal and vertical, so to speak, there was no demodulation. Those adjacent channels would drive the poor receiver, demodulator, crazy. And that's the way C-band worked, horizontal and vertical. In the case of KU-band, the adjacent channels are clockwise and counterclockwise. And so, again, there is polarization isolation. As long as you don't have great big raindrops out there, and as long as you don't have a branch of a tree in front of your dish. KC2RFN, KQRIW.
I take the circular polarization. It's only on the home, direct-to-home satellites. The commercial stuff is horizontal and vertical.
Oh-ho. So, if I wanted to receive with my KU band dish both the downlink for direct as well as the downlink for, what would you call it now? News networks or whatever like that. Not only are they on different frequencies, but they're on different polarizations. How does the average TVRO guy that wants to listen to both services, how does he get around that problem, Eric? Because if I had to switch from horizontal and vertical on KU band to clockwise and counterclockwise on KU band and keep the noise figure 20 degrees Kelvin, that's a tall order. Sounds to me like you got a separate LNB that you switch into the position. KE2EJ, KQRIW.
KQRIW, KE2EJ. Well, as I said, direct to home, meaning subscription services, meaning you're paying for TV that's scrambled, where you get every channel, like on DirecTV or Dish Network, which is Echo Star. Those are circularly polarized. Things like things that the news truck uses, or say Galaxy 4, or the various other commercial satellites, except for the Intelsat satellites. The Intelsat satellites that sit over the ocean, those are circularly polarized, but our domestic satellites are all H and B.
Okay, if I had a Ku-band dish and I wanted to listen to both services, it sounds to me like I need two separate LNC.
Well, you're not going to unless you're going to pay a lot of money. So, yeah, you need two LNBs.
Yeah, if I had to do something to the front end to flip from circular to linear and keep the noise figure, I think that's essentially out of the question. So it's got to be a separate LNB. But
now you could actually use the same LNB with a waveguide switch or two terminations into it. There's a number of ways to do it. But the other problem is the band are not the same. The commercial KU and the DirecTV KUs are different frequencies.
Are they about 1 or 2 gigs apart there, Eric?
Yeah, they're close. I mean, you know, the middle lines up, it's just the ends that you don't get.
Well, when it comes to the circular polarization direct dish service, unless I'm willing to pay the subscription, I think you're telling me there's nothing to watch there. Maybe there's an instruction channel, but I think you're saying there's nothing of value to watch. Is that true?
No, I said the Intelsat, which is Intelsat, which is the multi-country organization that organizes the satellites that sit over the Pacific and Atlantic oceans and the Indian Ocean, and they pass commercial traffic back and forth. Some of it is phone data, some of it is video, some of it is commercial data. But those satellites are circularly polarized.
Okay, if I had a wide enough scanning capability of my dish positioner, and if I've got a big enough dish that even though the footprint is not favoring me, and I look over the Atlantic Ocean to some of those Intelsats, and I've got CPD mod on the right frequency, are any of those watchable, or to your knowledge, or every bit of that scrambled? KE2EJ, KE2RIW?
KE2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, A, none of it's analog. Okay. If it's BMAC, which is a scientific antenna, there's no way you can watch it unless you have that special number for your BMAC receiver. If it's just standard MPEG-4 now, because it used to be all MPEG-2, but we've gone to MPEG-4 because it's much more efficient. It takes up less bandwidth, and you can stuff more high-def signals in the same space. A standard receiver will actually figure it out if it's done scrambled. A lot of the stuff is you know, when you could use this like specials or feeds or things like that. I think one of the satellites that hang over the oceans for like getting CNN and some other things around. And some of that's BMAX, so you're not going to get to see it. If you go to Langsat, LYNGSAT.com, they have a listing of every satellite and what's on every transponder, and you'll get an idea of how many thousands of things you could actually watch if you could see with your dish, but you'll see that you can only see so far around the corner of the earth, you know? K2RIW, K2J.
Okay, my TVRO dish is sitting in the backyard, in theory ready to go back on the tower. If I'm not willing to pay for the subscription services, is there anything left for me to watch, or would it be a pretty much wasted effort? What's your best guess on that one, Eric? K2RIW?
No, it wouldn't be a wasted effort. There is still a little bit of analog, which isn't scrambled. Although as far as like news feeds and stuff like that, if you go out and get a Pansat receiver or something like that, you can watch a lot of the stuff that's there. It's all digital. So, you know, you get HD outputs put into your nice big HD TV set.
okay?
Yeah, I do own a Pansat demodulator, which I've never used. Go ahead, Alan.
Do you remember back in the 80s when it was new with TVRO, we would pick up the news feeds before they even went live on the air? And Reagan had actually was joking around and said he had just outlawed Russia and the missiles were on their way, and that had been picked up by some TVRO viewers and pretty much panicked at the world. Do you remember that?
I've heard that story. I wasn't watching that particular one. I was watching a live feed when, why can't I think of the name of the guy from Channel 7 News, a real famous guy who was at the Reykjavik during the Khrushchev-Reagan meeting. What's that guy's name, Eric?
I have no idea who you're referring to. So if you were referring to local news people in those days, it was like, you know, Bill Butel and... Glad you couldn't see those people.
I think it was Peter Jennings. Peter Jennings was stationed out in front of that little white house in Reykjavik, Iceland, for hours on end, waiting for this summit meeting between Khrushchev and Reagan. And they agreed to disagree. So it was a great big wait, and I hope they had a great news report. I was watching that one live. I watched a number of news feeds. The raw feed before it got edited, and there were times when the raw feed, I got one impression, and after Dan Rather and his crew had edited it, what I saw was a slightly different story, and so those news feeds were kind of interesting in those days. I bet you heard stories along those lines, Eric. K2EJ, and then pass it over to Alan. K3EJ, K2RI3.
NY2H.
Yeah, well, let me tell you that Janine used to work for 2020 in The View. She quit because she couldn't deal with the politics that John Stoffel and his people had. So, an ongoing feud, you know, in terms of ethics. So that'll give you a little bit of a concept. So I'll turn it over to the next person. No, I'll turn it back to you, Dick, and you moderate. K2OW, K2J.
Alan next, and then Lou in that order. Go ahead, Alan.
I yield my time to NY2H.
You got it, Lou.
Hey, good evening, Alan. Good evening, Eric. And everybody on the net again. Yeah, I had a C-band TVRO back then, and caught a couple of the news feeds. Used to see the baseball players and stuff, and a lot of cursing. But the one dramatic one that I remember, it's etched into my brain, and I saw it happen live. It was a politician in the Pennsylvania area who was under some kind of indictment or whatever, and he was giving a press conference, and he had a manila envelope. He puts it in his mouth and blows his head off. And it was very graphic, and I won't get into all the graphic details, but I was blown away. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
What kind of words, Lou?
Are you saying you watched that live, Lou? Go ahead.
I did. Yes, I did. Then, you know, when it came on, they stopped at the point where he was ready to pull the trigger. But on the feed, of course, the raw feed, yeah, it was, I mean, well, I can tell you, he slumped down, you know, his brain blew over, there was like a curtain behind him, and two streams of blood just poured out of his nose. And, I mean, immediately, obviously died, but you could tell really didn't feel anything. But he got up there, and, you know, when he pulled out the gun, everybody was going, no, don't do it, you know, blah, 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 and bang.
I got one slightly morbid question. Where did he aim it? Did he aim it in his mouth?
Up right into his mouth.
Whoa, heavy. Was that roughly 1986-87, that time frame, Lou?
Yeah, probably so. I think that's around the time I lived in the other house, and I had the C-band dish. And I used to put it all the way, if I put it all the way to the west, I used to pick up telephones. You know, I had interface. I took the IF, I took a regular general coverage receiver and fed that in. All sorts of tricks you could do. You could take, I think, an FM receiver around 40 megahertz or something like that, 45, whatever the IF was, and you get the audio feeds. I mean, there's a lot of stuff up there. But when I used to take it down, I used to hear like one side of telephone conversations. So I don't know if I was picking up terrestrial microwave links or probably satellite. Probably satellite, because I remember one I would get like Fairbanks, Alaska, but you wouldn't hear the other side unless, very rarely you would if there was like talk back was loud or whatever. But you'd get one side of the conversation. So it was a little mini NSA operation going on there for a while.
You had a good location, Lou, I can tell. My TVRO was at the 50-foot or 60-foot level of my tower, but I've got 85-foot high trees. So therefore, to the west, I'd be looking into a tree. I couldn't go all the way down to the horizon. I was wishing I could watch that satellite that covered Alaska. They had a transponder in there that would quite often have a channel called Learn Alaska. And for the guys who had a clear horizon to the west, they could get down to that low-level satellite. I couldn't get to that one. It sounded like you did get to that satellite. So therefore, wherever you were located, you were on pretty high land with no trees to the southwest. NY2H, K2RW.
Well, we had a sump in the backyard, so there was no trees there. So it was a good shot. And as Alan was saying, I remember the little antenna in front of the LNB, and as I would go from one transponder to the other, you'd see it flip if you look at it on the dish, you know, vertical and horizontal. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. Larry King was a big one, and he used to, during commercials, he'd be talking to his guests, and again, a lot more frank than you would get on the air, so it was good stuff. That's all I have, NY2H.
What town were you living in at that time, Lou?
Same town, Port Jeff Station, but I was at another house. I was married at the time, and I was a little bit west of where I am now.
Were you lucky enough where you could aim the satellite dish anywhere you wanted to without running into trees?
More or less. I mean, you know, it was south to southwest, as I remember, and, you know, south was kind of higher elevation. You know, it was on the equatorial plain, and as you went to the west, it kind of lowered down.
And yours was a 12-foot diameter dish?
One of the big C-band ones. It was the one, the black one with the, you know, the mesh screening. And, yep, that's what it was. And I put it up myself, actually. The whole project, I was into it. It was fun at the time.
You had that mounted how many feet off the ground, Lou?
7 feet off the ground. The first time I guessed on it in post, and the post, as I tightened the mount for the dish, I cracked the cast iron, and so he said, no, you can't use cast iron. And then I got a beefy one, but I had to redo it, but it all worked out.
Yep, done with the good old days. Okay, we've run out of time. You guys have just listened to TechNet number 1558 of the series. We'll be back next week with more electronics being discussed. And back to you for any other comments, John. KC2WGB, K2LAW. Signing clear but listening.
KC2WGB. Very good, Dick. Yep, good night tonight. Hope to see everybody or hear everybody join in us next week. Maybe some more will come along, but I think we did well. If everything goes well, we shall return next Sunday. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
And during this last week, John, somebody asked me, what is our mission? Do we have a mission, John? Is it a clearly defined mission? Do we know what exact goal we're seeking? Or are we seeking a goal that is so vague that we don't even know when we've got there?
Yeah, that's a tough one, Dick. You know, with everything we know and everything we've studied and all of the inventions we've seen come and go and what's left out there, how much we don't know. So all we're trying to do is remove a little bit of ignorance, make some corrections, and have fun. And I am sure having fun with that, and I know you feel the same way. Yeah, it helps to just pass along a little bit of what we know. I think that's a good project for life. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah. In theory, we've passed on some information, and if enough of it is almost accurate, then some benefit has taken place. And this TechNet altogether from the very beginning of 1982, I've forgotten the number, but I think it's something like 5,000. It might be 5,000 total hours. I know the total number of hours of the TechNet from the beginning is greater than the total number of hours that Johnny Carson's been on the air in his 30 years. Okay, bye-bye, you all. And if we all stay healthy, we'll be back next week and try to settle some more of these unknowns. There's more unknown than there is known. K2RW clear.
Night, night, Dick. KD2CBV. WH4LY.
Good night, Dick.
Good night, and 146s to you.
And Dick, the next time we speak, you'll have to tell me how you hauled up what must have been at least an 8-foot dish up an 80-foot tower. KC2 or FM.
It's
gone
real quick tonight.
It's gone real quick. It's a 100-foot tower, but it was only at the 60-foot level. And then it's an 8-foot, why can't I think of the brand name? It's made in Florida in those days. It was a very good brand name. And the dish is not that heavy. It was a... It wasn't hauled up manually. It was hauled up with a minor equivalent of a block and tackle Allen grid.
Did you have a counterbalance arm on it on the other side of the tower?
No. The dish was hanging off the side of the tower on a very fancy frame that was part of a upright scaffolding company. Makes a very fancy frame that hangs off the side of a tower. And separate guy wires went to that structure. In other words, that structure wanted to twist the tower clockwise and counterclockwise, so to speak. It had separate guy wires to stop that twist. Over to you, Alan.
Got it. I put one up on the top of a two-story house, and that was challenging enough. I can imagine the lead arm up there, so of course those guy lines would be needed.
Yeah, it would never have survived Hurricane Gloria. It did survive Hurricane Gloria. Hurricane Gloria managed to upset the alignment. I had to do a retracking after Gloria, but it was still operational. And without those guy wires, it would have twisted that tower down to the ground immediately.
But if a mesh got blown out, as happened fairly often, did you have enough platform to stand on or place to stand on to replace? I don't see how you'd be able to replace them.
Yeah, that would be a little bit too far out. One of the things that I did do periodically is make the equivalent of a bosun's chair, suspend myself from the top of the 100-foot tower, and I could swing out a significant number of feet at the 60-foot level. So I probably could have gotten myself out to the perimeter of the dish. None of the panels came out during Hurricane Gloria. Those panels were locked in with these very fancy pieces of plastic on that particular 8-foot dish. Over to you, Alan.
And my first business that really worked was a satellite installation company. What I did is I actually leased them out, installed to motel chains.